Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Tulsa Symphony Orchestra continues its season Saturday night with a program titled Green. And appropriately enough, it features music that evokes or describes the natural landscape. On the program will be Alan Hovhaness's Mysterious Mountain, Tobias Picker's Old and Lost Rivers, and Ottorino Respighi's The Pines of Rome. Pianist Stephen Lynn will be the soloist in Rachmaninoff's Rhapsody on a Theme by Paganini, which rounds out the program. My guest today is guest conductor Aaron Collins, the artistic director and founder of the Space Coast Symphony Orchestra in Melbourne, Florida. Collins is a homegrown talent who grew up in Cocoa Beach and is involved with as many as 8 musical organizations in Central Florida and in his hometown, from brass ensembles to choruses. Collins is known for programming 20th century and contemporary works and for a young audience at his Space Coast Symphony concerts, with a majority being an under 40 crowd. He'll be leading the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra in Green Saturday night at 7:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center's Chapman Music Hall, and he joins me today as our guest on Studio Tulsa. Aaron Collins, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I think for any conductor, this would be a really fun program to conduct. You know, because you have this music that most people have never heard in Tobias Picker, mm-hmm. which is a beautiful work. When audiences hear that, they're going to want to hear this again and again.
Absolutely.
And The Pines of Rome, which you wouldn't want to do it every night, but it is a great piece to play, and it has these great moments. You have the Rhapsody on a Theme by Paganini, a wonderful orchestral work, and The Mysterious Mountain, another great piece that nobody plays this piece anymore.
And right. It's,
I don't know why people don't play it more.
Yeah, it's a very attractive piece. But this whole program, I mean, is something that has stuff for the connoisseur, and also, you know, music that I think will be attractive to people who are not familiar with these pieces or not familiar with just, you know, symphonic music in general. So you've got a wide range of music.
Now, is this the sort of program that you like to program yourself? Now, I know you didn't have anything to do with programming this.
Sure.
But from what I read about what you're doing at Space Coast Symphony, this mm-hmm. is the sort of program you're trying
to
do.
Yeah, I mean, people tend to say I lean towards 20th century music and music that's being written today. So I'm familiar with Tobias Picker. I've done several other of his works and have worked with him. So I was very happy to see that on the program. And then Hovhaness, like you mentioned, it doesn't get performed enough. I mean, none of it. He's written so much music, perhaps the most prolific composer of this century.
100-something symphonies or
yeah,
something like that?
It's nuts. And this particular symphony is just, I mean, it's still fresh today. Even though it's very tonal, it just has this just quality to it that just keeps it engaging even in the concert hall today. And then, of course, you got Pines of Rome, which is, you know, what you turn up to annoy your neighbors. And it's just one of those pieces that just is very exciting, full of colors, and really puts the orchestra, every section in the orchestra, kind of on alert and just really working very hard. And then we have Rachmaninoff, and it's just really beautiful music, and the pianist Stephen Lynn is tremendous and does a great job. So I know the audience will love this.
Well, you're a fairly young guy, and according to most newspaper accounts, you're still 27.
Right? Yes, they like, and which I'm okay with. You know, I've just turned 30, but. But
every
people,
time I turn around, it's like a 27-year-old Aaron Collins. I'm
right.
Going, wait a minute. This was 3 years ago. This is last week.
Right. I'm okay with that. And, you know, when I get approached in the audience, they say, oh, you're still a baby. And, you know, I can live with that for now until I, you know, start getting gray hair.
But usually when we think of conductors in their 20s, you're still learning repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the case for you? Or?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've always taken the approach to just there's always something to learn. And there's just so many people out there that know so much more than I do, and I just try to absorb as much as I can. And, I mean, I study music pretty hard, but no matter what, there's always music out there that, you know, you've got to learn. And also composers that I might dislike but come to like later, and you know, later down the road. Like, I really did not like Rachmaninoff before, like, maybe 5 or 6 months ago. And I conducted a second symphony, and then all of a sudden, I just became a huge fan and started digging out his
and
works.
And that's also part of youth, too. I mean,
right, yeah.
And being exposed to music. And But you're doing it in front of the orchestra as opposed to in the orchestra, or that's got to be daunting.
It is, but it's just like discovering something and just falling in love with it. So it's not too bad.
Well, what's really interesting to me is you're pretty much a homegrown talent. Grew up in Cocoa Beach, mm-hmm. You came back to Cocoa Beach,
right.
And started conducting. I think you had a choral group, you had a couple of community groups that you were conducting, and all of a sudden, I think your choral group wanted to do the Verdi Requiem and said, mm-hmm. I got to get an orchestra together.
Right.
And out of that came a symphony that now is pretty close to regional status.
It is, yeah.
And that's only 3 years ago, too.
Right. I mean, the orchestra, that particular symphony has just blossomed, the Space Coast Symphony. But I grew up in music. My family was involved in music. My grandma was a singer on the Lawrence Welk Show. And, my mother is an educator. So I've really, grown up into that world and started writing music at a young age. And then, Cocoa Beach was an area I loved. And after I went to college, I decided that I wanted to be close to my family. My mom was not feeling too well at the time, and I just wanted to be down there. And then I just kind of settled, and one group led to another, and the next thing it's like Sound of Music, where I've got all kinds of activities going on, and it's just and then with Space Coast, I started it because I saw a need in that area, and it's just grown into being a really strong group that does a lot of great things in the community.
Now, as I understand it, that symphony draws most of its audience of under 40s?
Yeah, actually, it's kind of a backwards symphony. Well, the reason why I started it was just ticket prices. I just wanted to really make a symphony that was accessible and affordable to everybody. So we always had low ticket prices. We took that model and then also gave kids 18 and under for free, which I think every orchestra should do. I mean, it's so important to get this younger generation into the concert hall, and they'll love it once they get in there, just hearing the sound, seeing all the music being put together on stage. So it just kind of took off, and it's almost like going to a rock concert at these concerts. A lot of it's unpolished. People kind of murmur and talk, and I'm okay with that. They clap when they want, and that's all right. It's like going to a soccer game. So it's fun.
It sounds like you're throwing all the conventions on its head.
Have to. Yeah. I mean, in this day and age, you've got to always think outside of the box and just go with your gut and see what happens. And, the worst thing that happens is, it doesn't work and you work on something else.
My guest today is guest conductor Aaron Collins. He'll be leading the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra this Saturday night in a program titled Green, which is sort of the earth. And
right.
And you have a little bit of, fire, the sea, everything. And
right.
this old flowing rivers, everything in this particular concert. Let's talk about the works, if we can, for a moment.
Sure.
The Hofhannes, Mysterious Mountain. I think it was written in the 1940s.
It was.
Yeah.
Stokowski asked Hofhannes to write this work, and he already had a portion of it done, and then he added the second and third movement to it, and it became his most popular piece. And in fact, he didn't really care for it. I mean, every time I read about it, interview later in life, he's always looked at that piece as it has so many attractive melodies, and it's just so listenable, and it's extremely exciting to hear. I mean, I would be very proud of it if I wrote it.
Hofhannes, for the most part, mysticism was a big part of his music.
Right.
And what I like about this is sometimes that mysticism goes a little overboard in some mm-hmm. of his later works. Here, that element of mysticism is there, but it's not...
It's not on the forefront of the...
Yeah.
Of it. Yeah, it's just kind of in the very, very background.
So how do you approach a work like this?
It's just... You just have to just be... It's got to be much more relaxed. It's when you're approaching it, a relaxed approach to it. So, and that's the same when working with the musicians. You don't want to make it too ponderous or heavy. You've just got to think very light, effervescent, and approach it that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear a little music from Alan Hofhannes' Mysterious Mountain. This will be performed by the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra this Saturday night with our guest conductor, Aaron Collins. Here's music from Mysterious Mountain. That's music by Alan Hovhaness, The Mysterious Mountain, one of the pieces to be performed by the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra this Saturday night at 7:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. My guest today is guest conductor Aaron Collins, who's the music director of the Space Coast Symphony Orchestra and about seven other groups in and around Brevard County and Cocoa Beach and Melbourne, Florida. And I think this is, before we talk about the other pieces of music, I think this is one of the interesting things. You're really trying to, you know, for a long time, conductors had this sort of jet set mentality. Mm-hmm. I'm in one spot, but I'm going to conduct anywhere and everywhere I can all around the world, around the country. You're really saying I'm about this spot's music scene and about creating a cultural scene in the place where I'm living.
Absolutely.
And where I'm working.
Yeah, jet setting's nice, and I enjoy every time I have an opportunity to guest conduct an orchestra outside of the area, but, you know, I'm really fond of that community, and, you know, it's...
Well, growing up there, I would think you'd have to be.
Yeah, exactly, and it's just, it's really great to go in there and do as much as I can and make a change, and I think there has been a lot of change over the last 3 or 4 years. I don't want to say it's because of me. I might have been the catalyst for some of it, but, you know, or inspiration, but it certainly is the whole community, you know, working and seeing it grow, so it's very exciting.
You know, I think of the sports analogy. Conductors are somewhat like high-profile coaches today. I mean, they go wherever the money is, and
sure.
I mean, it's about the art too. But don't.
Yeah, money's definitely an important thing.
Money's a part of it, yeah. And it's the prestige as well. But when a coach comes back to his hometown or his alma mater, mm-hmm. there's something special about that, and
absolutely.
Usually something special happens. And I have to feel it the same way. It's like when you're working in your hometown, there's something extra about that.
Completely agree. It's just it's what I love, and I'm happy just making music, and if I can change just one life or introduce one person to music, and that really just that makes my day.
Let's talk about the Rachmaninoff, the composer you didn't really care for that much,
right?
A couple of years ago, you're doing the Rhapsody on a Theme by Paganini,
mm-hmm.
working with Stephen Lynn, the pianist.
Yeah.
How do you work with a soloist? Can you talk about your approach of you know working out his approach with your approach?
Sure. Well, I kind of leave it in their hands. I mean, I've had the great opportunity to work with some really fine soloists, and my style or the way I approach to work has kind of changed over time. And I think it was the pianist Jeffrey Beagle I was working with, and we were doing Rhapsody in Blue. And, you know, he just came up and said, you know, gave me all these, you know, talked about the piece when it was written, what was happening in the time, and just kind of was telling me all the way he wanted to perform it. And it just kind of completely changed my perception of that piece and how it should be performed. So I think from that point on, I just started figuring the best way to approach a work is letting the soloist kind of, how do they want to perform it? What's their vision of the work? Not just from a, you know, the approach of the solo part, but from how the orchestra plays, you know, certain passages and how we approach, you know, the shape of the lines and the music. So it's my approach is to get with the soloist and see it, you know, and kind of explore their vision with just a little, you know, dash of Aaron on top.
Yeah, and this is such an episodic piece too, because it's variations, and they're very plainly variations.
Yes, very much so.
What's your approach to making sure that it comes together as a whole? Because each variation is
right. I mean, and they're so short. I mean, they're like 45 seconds, 2 minutes. I mean, we're very short episodes, and the transitions. I think that's the toughest thing with this particular work is the transitions between each of those pieces, but you know, it all makes sense together, and you know, there's two themes, the Paganini and of course the Dies Irae, that you have to kind of intertwine and make them work together. But you know, Rachmaninoff does so well. You know, he was always, people said he wasn't a very good orchestrator, but I'm totally not of that opinion. I think he really put together some really great music and colors in this particular work. So
my guest today is Aaron Collins, who will be leading the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra in a program titled Green, featuring the Rachmaninoff Rhapsody on the Theme by Paganini with Stephen Lynn. Also on the program will be works by Tobias Picker, Ottorino Respighi, and Alan Hovhaness, and the concert takes place this Saturday at 7:30. Let's talk about this Tobias Picker. Mm-hmm. I was unfamiliar with this piece until just hearing it in the last day or two. I'm already in love with this piece. This piece is gorgeous. It's one of the most gorgeous 21st century pieces around.
Yeah, and I mean, there's not a melody that, you know, really sticks out that, you know, someone could go out and hum, but it's just the textures and the just kind of the feeling he creates out through the whole thing. There's no loud to it. It's just a very, very, it's like floating down, it's almost like floating down those rivers and just kind of just taking everything in with little shifts of color and shapes and textures coming out. And I agree. I think it is one of the, and it's very popular too. I mean, people, once they hear it, they go gaga goo goo over it. And and it's a really beautiful piece.
Old and Lost Rivers, that's the name of the piece, and it's probably as evocative a piece of programmatic music I've heard in a while. I mean, right. It really is an inner tube trip down a real slow-moving river.
Seems it like. Certainly is, and it's I think the audience will love it.
Well, let's hear a little music by Topias Picker. This is a portion of Old and Lost Rivers, which will be performed by the Tulsa Symphony this Saturday night. Music by Topias Picker, which will be on the program for the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra with my guest today, conductor Aaron Collins, as we talk about the program this Saturday night. And the final work is Ottorino Respighi's The Pines of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a wonderful piece. It's bombastic. It's glorious. It is every bit as pastoral in one sense as that Old and Lost Rivers.
Right.
And it's a little bit of everything. And talk about orchestrations. Respighi was a master orchestrator.
Absolutely. I mean, he studied with Rimsky-Korsakov. He was very keen on becoming the best orchestrator in classical music. And I think this particular all of his works, I just really have those colors and those just the way he uses each instrument and the pairings of instruments and the lines is just really fascinating and exciting. It's very descriptive. You can almost see the imagery just through the music, and that's really a credit to him and his passion for orchestration.
You know, it's funny. I think sometimes Respighi says, you know, he's orchestration in search of a melody, mm-hmm. but in this particular piece, I think he's got really wonderful melodies.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, each movement has exciting melodies and beautiful melodies. I mean, the third movement just melts your heart, and it's completely different from the outer movements. And just the key behind this piece is not, I mean, you mentioned, said bombast, and people associate this work with bombast, but the key is really the subtleties in the two inner movements. And just the quiet moments, and that really makes those two outer movements even more exciting. And it's a perfect work. I mean, the whole outline of the work, the architecture of it, and there's nothing quite like it.
And of course, Respighi was using the technology of his time. He has I assume it was probably an early wire recording of a nightingale.
Yeah, I would have loved to hear what it sounded like back when it was premiered and what kind of sounds he imagined. You know, yeah. I've always wanted to bring live birds into an auditorium and just have them, you know. He was very keen on what was happening and very attracted to birdsong, and you can hear that in the music as well, in all of his music.
And you were mentioning the third movement into the fourth. That transition is really an amazing piece of music because you're literally, the orchestra is there's a term we use, niente, mm-hmm. you know, down to nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's what the orchestra is doing. And then in this, the last movement is, you know, the Pines of the Appian Way, and it evokes the whole Roman legion returning to Rome.
Right.
And then you hear this boom, boom.
You just hear slow, you know, hear the slow footsteps and the rumbling, you know, just you barely hear it, but something's, and then it just leads into just some tremendous solo work in the English horn, and then it just grows into, I mean, I can't think of a better closer for a piece of music as far as just sound and just being completely enveloped by a piece of music than Pines of Rome. It's captivating.
Now, are you going to be using extra brass on this?
We will, yeah. It's got, you know, we're going to have organ, extra brass. I mean, the orchestra is gigantic as it is. We started rehearsing last night, and just the sound is going to be exciting.
Oh, we're looking forward to the concert. Tulsa Symphony Orchestra presents the program titled Green, and the green comes from mountains, landscapes like the Pines of Rome, slow-moving rivers, and a little bit of fire as well with the Rhapsody on a Theme by Paganini. Aaron Collins is my guest. Now, you're still a young guy. You know, what are your plans? You're like 30 years old. You've got these orchestras.
Mm-hmm.
You're starting to guest conduct beyond your own home base.
Right.
What's the plan for you?
You know, just keep going at it. I mean, the biggest thing to me is getting people who have never been into the concert hall to come. Check it out for, you know, for a first time. And so that's a major passion of mine. So I've been lucky enough to be invited to several places and several orchestras that kind of like the models that that I in part created, and you know, help them bring a new audience to the concert hall.
I don't know how often you get to see the governance of the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're familiar with the history, it was a regular regional orchestra.
Right.
Now, basically, the orchestra members created their own.
And that's
governance.
It's a great model, and a model that's set up for success. And as time goes on, and they're relatively young. I mean, it's what, 5 or 6 years now, and I think this orchestra has the potential to go leaps and bounds above. I mean, you know, producing more concerts and just engaging a new audience. So, what I've seen so far has been great, and the staff and all the musicians have been very accommodating. I haven't been kicked yet, or nothing's been thrown at me, and they're just very, very nice people and been very welcoming and so open arms.
Now, you know, a lot of people are worried about the future of classical music. They see the audience getting older. It's always in America been an older audience. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's something you did when you got a little older.
Right.
But you're sort of turning that model on the head by actually going to the people that the orchestra's never really tried to appeal to, 20s and 30-somethings, and say, come out.
Yeah.
I know that people are really worried about that, and seemingly a lot of orchestras really don't seem to have a clue about how to do that. What is your one idea that can get those folks out?
I don't know if it's a one idea. It's a combination, but, I mean, it's you've just got to make it accessible. I mean, and by what I mean, you know, first just get rid of the high society notion of, you know, you have to dress up, you have to, you know.
Now, does your orchestra wear tuxes?
We do wear tuxes. You know, that I think that's one bit of traditionalism that's left in the orchestra is tuxes. But, you know, we vary in our costumes and our, in our wear. But, you know, it's just how you approach the audience, being casual, the way you speak to the audience. It's like I would speak to you, to a friend. You know, just you have to be, you know, just yourself. And another thing is getting musicians and myself out in the audience during the intermission, after the concert, to engage the audience.
It sounds like you're really about breaking that wall that's traditionally existed between performers and audience.
Yeah, there is no wall. I mean, and every group should think that way. And then on top of it is programming music that's exciting. And I do a lot of new music, and, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, especially the connoisseurs of classical music, you know, don't care for some new music that's being written. But, you know, newer audiences that have never heard it, you know, they love it. And even if it's way out there, they love it. And it's quite an interesting, you know, experience to see the excitement when you're playing like something by Pierre Boulez or something along those lines, that the audience would actually be attracted to something like that. So, you know, every single thing that you can do to be outside of the box, I do, and and I love it, and it's paying off, and it's great to be in the music.
You know, you're doing new music, but are you doing music that could be controversial? For example, you know, Rite of Spring 100 years ago caused a riot. Mm-hmm. There was a riot in the 1970s at the New York Philharmonic. Do you encourage, like, if you don't like the piece, you know, let me know?
Sure. I mean, I did mention...
Or are you trying to pick the more accessible new pieces of music?
A combination of both. I mean, you have to have a careful balance. You can't just go right out there and just, you know, pound them with new music after new music. That's, but I think it's a combination of both. There's pieces that... I just did a piece not too long ago by a college composer, and it involved ping pong ball sounds along with the orchestra. And it was a strange piece. And it was almost John Cage-ish where, you know, the ping pong ball was just there and it was eliciting a reaction from the audience. But all in all, I mean, it's something that's being written in my area. And it's something that the audience has never heard. And so it's, you know, you have to play a careful balance and pick works that, you know, appeal. And then, of course, the classic works. But everything's fresh, and we try to keep everything, you know, inventive and making it very accessible. Accessible is the key.
Now, when you do a Tchaikovsky symphony, for example, mm-hmm. you know, or maybe, you know, another composer that's sort of the height of Romanticism, maybe Brahms, which... you know, is beautiful, beautiful music, but it might be a little sedate for a 20 or 30 something. Do you get them responding to that sort of music as well?
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, one thing I think that people have pointed out about me, I try to, is my energy. I mean, it's kind of just maybe too much energy. I don't want to say I'm like on Leonard Bernstein energy where I'm, you know, gyrating and doing, you know, the samba on the podium, but, you know, my energy and the orchestra's energy is very infectious. And I find that no matter what music you're playing, as long as that energy is on stage and the audience can connect to that energy, you know, you can play anything and have them excited.
Well, we wish you great success.
Thank you, my friend.
With your orchestra and with the Tulsa Symphony this Saturday night. Aaron Collins, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Aaron Collins is my guest. He will be the guest conductor for the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra's program titled Green, Saturday night at 7:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center's Chapman Music Hall. Call 918-596-7111 for ticket information or visit tulsasymphony.org. We're going to leave you with a little music from the Pines of Rome. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.